Yay! I know Sharon left the room immediately, but yay! I mean, what she was saying when I came into the room was music, music, music to my ears. Like, I can't even express. I love it when someone realizes they need to do the work themselves. I mean, there is nothing more exciting to me than watching somebody have that realization, and then they go and do it. I totally agree with her that there are a lot of people trying to copy other people's papers. I have watched people try and copy me. I have watched people try and copy others. I've watched people, you know, you hear the term parrot. I've watched people parrot me. I've watched people parrot others. That's not it. That is not it. And there is nothing more exciting to me than to watch someone say, you know what, I quit that. I am going to, you know, go within and find my own guidance, my own realizations. I'm going to allow my own erred thinking to be pointed out to me. I'm going to allow my own practices to be given to me. Because then I know that that's exactly what's going to happen. And I do celebrate what I call honest awakening or integrity, no matter where a person is. It doesn't matter to me. You know, if we look at the world, it does seem like when we're awakening, it seems like we're in different places at different times. Sometimes it seems like we're all having the same realization at once. I've had that experience too, but sometimes it seems like we're in different places at different times, and one thing that I don't do, when somebody is expressing an honest realization they are having, I never go in and explain to them there's a higher realization. Instead, I celebrate their realization right where they're at with them. Because I know that one realization at a time, we all are going to get to the same scene, the same capital R realization. And so I just love to celebrate wherever a person is at in their awakening, and I love to watch them say, you know what, I have to do this. There's nothing I would rather hear anyone say than that. You know, I'm just very, very happy for everything Sharon was saying when I came in the room. It sounded extremely sincere. I'm really happy for her. And for everyone else who makes the choice to start going within and finding whatever they find there. To some degree, although we do help each other, you know, there's no doubt about that. We help each other. So there's a certain degree that we, you know, read and that we listen to teachers outside of us. But there's also a certain degree to which we need to disregard everyone and everything and only listen to our inner voice. It's like both are true. Those two statements do not contradict each other. It's a balancing, and it's your own inner self that knows that balance for you, that knows when it is helpful. You know, there was a time when I was very, very, very focused inward. I mean, NTI came from total inward focus. I wasn't listening to any teachers. I wasn't reading any books. The same thing happened with the teachings of Inner Ramana. That was a total inner focus. I was not studying Ramana Maharshi. I was not listening to any teachers, any Advaita teachers. It was a total inner work. You know, and there are other things that came through, like the thoughts of awakening, the personal messages with Laurent. But there also came a point after I moved to Pueblo when there was this prompting, I don't know what else to call it. There was this prompting, this nagging feeling that my ego was blocking my next realization that needed to occur. That, although so much had been accomplished, you could say on my own, listening to my own withinness and getting out of the way, and so much had come through, what was to come through next was being blocked. And that there was no way I could sit here in this chair like I had in the past with that process of listening within and get what I needed to get next. And so at that point, I was prompted outward. Specifically, I was prompted outward to listen to Muji. I had about 9 months, I think you guys know, of paying attention to Muji. That was the teacher that seemed to show up for me. And in fact, very, very quickly, in fact, on the very first day of listening to Muji, the realization that I needed to have began to become clear. And then it just was emphasized and emphasized and emphasized. But then what happened at the end of that period of time is that I also was beginning to listen to not really necessarily Muji. It seemed like somehow in the process of listening to Muji, I became aware of an entire community of that were speaking from the voice of enlightenment, I'll say, or at least they said they were speaking from the voice of enlightenment. I personally could never discern or judge whether they were or not. And something began to happen as this entire community came into my awareness, is that the ego started grabbing onto that in my mind, and the ego wanted to do exactly what Sharon was talking about, copy their work. And it's kind of funny because actually it was a little bit of a struggle going on within myself, because on the one hand, I would hear things like, you know, you are enlightened now. All you need to do is say that. All you need to do is quit thinking you're not, and it's here. On the one hand, I would hear that, and then on the other hand, there was still this little no in my mind. You know, no. And so there was this struggle going on of whether I listened to them or whether I listened to myself, you could say. And what happened is that I went to India around this time. And while I was in India, as you guys know, I received a guidance to pull back again, to go back into only listening to myself, not listening to teachers. Now, it's impossible in a world of Facebook not to ever see anything another teacher writes. The truth is I see little quotes and little posts every day, but it's not the same kind of reading and studying that I was doing last year. Last year I read two of Muji's books. I looked at Jan Fraser's book. I don't think I could even remember. I'd have to walk over to my book. Robert Adams, I know, came up last year. I'd have to walk over and look at my bookshelf to tell you what all I read last year. Byron Katie, right? I was reading more books last year than I've read since I've been on the spiritual path. And, you know, whenever you read, although there is certainly something of value in all of that, and the heart knows what to pull out of that and take, at the same time, the mind is reading too. And the mind is taking things that maybe aren't so helpful. So it's kind of like both are going on at the same time. Where with the inner process that I experience, other than, you know, other than blocking a realization I needed to have last year, the mind isn't there in the same way. It's a more pure process for me. So that's what I do. I focus within. Now, I have always had something almost to prompt what was working within. You know, there was the relationship with Laurent that was prompting me to those messages. I was reading the New Testament as the New Testament's interpretation was coming through. I don't think there was a specific prompt, to be honest, about the inner Ramana work. That just came on its own. There wasn't always a specific prompt about the thoughts of awakening. Those just came on their own. But I was guided to what I'm going to call a prompting book for the inner work that I'm doing now, and that prompting book is the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is what we're here to look at today. So that book is simply prompting my own inner listening, my own inner hearing, my own inner process. And I'm really grateful to be back in the purity of that inner process, and I'm also very grateful when I see anyone else saying they're going into the purity of their own inner process. But that doesn't mean there won't be a time when they need to listen to a teacher again, just as I did last year, because the ego is blocking something. So, you know, both are true. We can never make statements of this is how it is. You should listen to teachers. or you should not listen to teachers, because Holy Spirit needs to give us the guidance of what is best for us right now in this current circumstance. What we need to do is learn to listen to that inner prompting that we call Holy Spirit in this community, which I also like to just call wisdom or the inner guide, and let it guide us in what is best for us now. So there may be a time of turning off from others and only going within, and then there may be a time of coming back out again and listening to a teacher who is saying something that we need to hear, right? And it's all perfect. So as I mentioned, we are here to look at the work I am doing with the seven steps. And we are going to begin today on number 284. I am posting a link to my journal, number 284, in the room. Dove is quoting me. I'm certain I said this. I don't remember when, but it certainly sounds like something I would say. If you are hanging out in the spiritual community and not doing the work, you are wasting your time. And then he's also quoting someone named, I don't know if I'm saying this name right, Makes Cha, M-A-I-X, and then second name C-H-A, Makes Cha. All sons of God must go through seeming darkness to undo his mistakes and return to the mind of God. All right, if you're on the radio and you want to get to number 284 in my journal, you just go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. We are working on step 2 right now, so you'll click on step 2 on the menu bar and then find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your own way to number 284, because that is where we are going to begin. And what I'd like to do before I start looking at that is just take a moment of silence. Amen. All right, so in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, we are reading from quotes by Sri Nizar Gadada Maharaj. I'm on page 59, and I am reading quote number 284. Desire can produce a universe. Its powers are miraculous. That is the quote. And last night, when we were closing up the seven steps and we were looking at number 283, I talked about how desire is the seed that makes the world, not only its pleasures, but also its conflicts and its suffering. So this quote is following on that initial thought about desire. The desire makes the world, right? Its pleasures, its conflicts, and its suffering. And Sri Nizar Gadada says, desire can produce a universe. Its powers are miraculous. All right, so let's look at my journal, number 284. Desire is the seed that makes the world, its pleasures, and its suffering. Likewise, desire, rightly placed on the heart, brings on the tsunami of self-realization. I'm going to go back and read a couple other journal entries to you, because we're in kind of a little pattern here, and we're starting in the middle of the pattern. So the first one I'm going to go back and read to you is journal entry Let's see, probably 280. Let me see if that's it. Yes, 280. 281. I'm reading journal entry 281. All right, so listen to this. The perspective of mind cannot know or imagine the glory perspective of one scene. The ultimate is not divisive, and so it is changeless, emptyful, never lacking, always silent. Do not try to imagine or imitate the Supreme. Instead, move toward it by reflecting on silent self, by watching present being. Step into the ocean of wholeness, dipping your toes into its waters, and expect a tsunami of realization to sweep you up into direct experience knowing. So, in short, this is saying do not try to use the mind to have what I will call God perspective, right? Instead, continually focus your attention on the highest God awareness that you have, whether that is just your willingness to know God, or whether that is a silent, still self that you have uncovered and become in touch with, and you can place your attention there. Spend as much time as possible focusing on your highest God awareness, your highest self awareness, right? And expect that through this practice of focusing on your highest God awareness, a tsunami of realization will sweep you up into direct experience knowing, or full realization of self. That's number 281, the first part of this little series. The next thing I'm going to read is 283. Desire is the seed from which all of the world, its pleasures, its conflicts, and its suffering is made. One attached to desires may feel those desires are needed. Without them, there would be suffering. The truer statement is this: suffering could not be if first there were not desires. So this is referring to what I'm going to call worldly desires, or desires that are not focused on the God self, but desires that are focused on being something other than the God self, and support that idea that I am something other than the God self. These are the desires that lead to all suffering. All right, and now number 284. Desire is the seed that makes the world, its pleasures, and its suffering. Likewise, desire rightly placed on the heart brings on the tsunami of self-realization. So what this is saying is that you have this energy called desire. And this energy called desire could be focused on buying a house by the lake. It could be focused on finding a romantic partner. It could be focused on, you know, getting a dream job. Right? It could be focused on getting a new car. It could be focused on a number of things. But whenever the desire is focused on anything outward, anything that the false self could want, right? Anything that supports the idea that I am this person, what it ultimately leads to is suffering. So what do you do with this energy called desire? You take that same energy and you turn it inward. And you desire only to know the truth, only to know thyself, only to see clearly without illusion. Whatever wording works for you. But you take that desire and you turn it inward towards the God self. And this helps to bring on that tsunami of self-realization, because desire is a miraculous power. As Sri Nisargadatta said, desire can produce a universe. Its powers are miraculous. If it can produce an entire universe, it can also awaken one to the realization of what you are, right? So you take that power and you spend all of your time with your desire, focus on desiring to know thyself. I remember when I watched The Secret when it first came out several years ago. And of course, The Secret is teaching us how to use desire and how to use gratitude and how to use focus in order to manifest the things that we want in the world. Well, when I watched The Secret, Holy Spirit reinterpreted it for me. And it basically said that there's nothing wrong with those skills that are taught in The Secret, but all of those skills should be used in the purpose of awakening. So I spend my time desiring awakening, right? I spend my time having gratitude for every realization, every little inkling of awakening that is occurring, right? I take the same skills that are taught in The Secret, but I take all of that desire energy and I turn it on the self. Because it's miraculous energy. And if that miraculous energy can take me away from knowing who I am, the same miraculous energy can take me back into remembering who I am. There's a line in the Course that says the Holy Spirit uses everything ego made. Well, it is true that in God, right, in that full awareness of self, there is no desire. We could say that the ego made desire. But desire is miraculous. It can make universes. And the Holy Spirit can use everything that the ego made to awaken us. So we take desire. We all know how to desire. No one needs to teach us to desire. We take desire and we just focus the desire on wanting to know thyself, wanting to know only truth, wanting to see clearly without illusion, wanting to be only love, wanting to hear and act from one voice. Anything like that would do. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 285, which is at the bottom underneath the comment and reply section. I will also put a link to 285 in the room. I'm going to read number 285 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is a quote from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. In reality, nothing ever happens. That's the extent of the quote. In reality, nothing ever happens. All right, let's look at my journal, number 285. Just as short. In truth, there is no change. There is only truth. This is a theme that we are going to see repeated over and over as we go through my Seven Steps journal. It's a major theme that truth is changeless. Therefore, anything that changes cannot be truth. You know, and one example we could take is my personality. Let's look at Regina Dawn Akers. There are some things that seem to be consistent about my personality. As far back as I can remember, I have enjoyed sunny days. I've enjoyed being outside on sunny days. Gosh, is that it? That may be it. Maybe there's one thing that has been consistent. For many, many years, I adored dogs in a way that, just every single dog I saw, I just, wanted them to be mine. You know, I just loved every dog. And although I still, enjoy dogs and like dogs, I don't have that same passion probably because that passion has been taken and turned inward towards the self. Right? So that has changed. You know, there were times in my life when I was a child and I thought like a child and I played the games of a child. And then there were times in my life when I was in a very religious pursuit. And there were a number of years that I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses, very zealous, you know, studying, using their guides every day, going door to door, you know, trying to get others to see the truth. There was also a period of time that I did a lot of drugs. We could say I experimented with drugs, but the truth is it went beyond experimentation. It was a lifestyle for a number of years, drugs and alcohol and partying. I could go on, but there's been changes. Other than enjoying the sun, everything about Regina has changed. It's had phases. So she can't be real. Because in truth, there is no change. This one sentence, which has about six words in it, in truth, there is no change. That one sentence can be used to evaluate anything that appears or any thought that comes in the mind in order to determine if that is true or if that is illusion. If it changes, it is not true. You know, in spiritual circles, we talk a lot about love because love is often, love is one of the words that is used to describe the ultimate. Whether, you know, God is another word, the Supreme is another word, Source is another word, but love is one of those words. And the Course says things like, only your loving thoughts are true. But one of the realizations that I've come across is that what I thought of as love, what I thought of as my loving thoughts, those are actually also illusion because they change, right? There are times that I love this one and there are times that I don't anymore. I now love this one, right? They change. And so if my thoughts, if my quote, loving thoughts can change, those weren't loving thoughts in the first place. Those weren't truth. They weren't my true thoughts. Because my true thoughts never change. They're consistent. By using these six words, we can cut through so much stuff to realize that can't be truth because it changes. That can't be truth because it changes. It's a fast track to realizing the difference between truth and illusion. Another thing that some people feel is truth is the idea of reincarnation. You know, I'm Regina Dawn Akers now, but in a previous life I was this one, in another life I was that one, and this happened to me and this happened to me. But if I could be Regina Dawn Akers in this life and so in that life, that is a change. Therefore, that cannot be truth. That has to be illusion. Right? It's such an easy way to determine the difference between truth and illusion. In fact, I find it easier than the criteria of love because we have messed up ideas about what love is. You know, so if we use love as the criteria to determine what is true and what is false, we may likely be including a lot of false into the true bucket because it met our definition of love, not really realizing that our definition was wrong. But change, that's not, at least for me, as confusing. That's very clear and very easy to discern. If it changes, it is not truth. In truth, there is no change, right? There is only truth. So, like I said, this is just an introduction of an idea which we're going to see come up in the journal over and over again, but it is not a minor idea. It is a major idea that is used to distinguish between illusion and non-illusion or truth. All right, so if you scroll down, you can click on number 286. Number 286 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, again, is a Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. And it says, "The only thing that can help is to wake up from the dream." The only thing that can help is to wake up from the dream. That reminds me very much of A Course in Miracles when it says, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. The only thing that can help is to wake up from the dream. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. All right, let's look at the journal, number 286. The answer to every problem is truth realization. When this is seen clearly, truth realization becomes the only reasonable desire. So why do we have outward-focused desires? Because we still think they'll solve a problem for us. We think that if I get that, I will feel secure. Or if I get that, I will feel loved, or I will feel worthy, or I will feel like I belong, right? So anything that we actually desire because we believe it will solve some problem or some sense of lack that we have. That's where the desire comes from. When we realize that the only thing that will ever solve this sense of lack that we have is to know ourself, then that becomes the only reasonable desire. Only the truth is, this is clarity each one needs to get to on their own. You know, we were talking about at the beginning of this hour, you can't copy someone else's work. If I realize that the only reasonable desire is truth realization, and I say that, you can repeat what I have said, but that doesn't mean that you yet realize it. You can say truth realization is the only reasonable desire, and at the same time find yourself working very hard to try and find a romantic partner, or to try and bring money, more money into your life, right? And that's because even though you're saying that truth realization is the only reasonable desire, the truth is you still think, but this will make me happy. Money will make me happy, or a romantic relationship will make me happy. And each person needs to learn for themselves that these outer-focused desires never resolve that sense of lack. Even if you're able to get all of the money that you need to satisfy that financial sense of lack, and there truly is no financial sense of lack now. Now there's a sense of financial abundance in your life. The sense of lack will just pop up somewhere else. You know, you may want power. Power is a popular one that pops up once the sense of financial lack is addressed. Then people want power. They want to influence others. Right? That satisfies the sense of lack. Being popular, being well-liked could show up. The romantic thing could show up next. Needing to have someone to care for, you know, a child or a pet or even an elderly person to care for could show up. If you pay attention, desires in the world can be fulfilled. There's no doubt about that. In fact, I had set out in my life with a number of things I wanted to accomplish. I didn't consciously realize it at the time, but the reason I wanted to accomplish them was to feel worthy. I felt very unworthy, and I thought that if I accomplished these things, I would feel worthy. You know, one of them was I wanted to travel. I thought worthy people traveled. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have a successful career. I wanted to live in a neighborhood of other successful people, be a part of a successful crowd, right? You know, so, and I actually accomplished all of those things. And you know what happened when I got there? I say on top of my own little anthill with everything accomplished, everything. There was nothing left undone. There was just kind of this, huh, there was still this empty feeling, still this not it feeling. It's like, huh, you know, I thought that when I got here, when I got everything I wanted, that I would be fulfilled. Fulfillment didn't happen. And so I started to ask, I was just asking myself, but I realize now that's the same as asking within. I started to ask, now what? And for me, the spiritual path began shortly after I began asking that, now what? So you see, that's how my realization came about. My realization that no desire can actually fulfill, no outward focused desire can actually fulfill that sense of lack, came about by going after and literally achieving or fulfilling every one of them and still having it. It made everything that I had ever wanted seem meaningless, because the truth is I didn't get what I really wanted, which was that sense of fulfillment, that sense of completeness. And until we realize that, we will still seek outwardly. But when we realize that, the outward seeking will stop, because we will realize the truth realization is the only reasonable desire. It's the only desire that will truly give us what we actually seek, which is that sense of fulfillment or that sense of completeness. So the answer to every problem, is truth realization. When this is seen clearly, truth realization becomes the only reasonable desire. And as we saw in an earlier journal entry today, if we focus on that desire, the desire to know only truth, to know thyself, really put a lot of attention on that desire, that has the miraculous power to bring on the tsunami of self-realization. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 287. I will also post number 287 in the room. And I'm going to read from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 287. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Treating everything as a dream liberates. As long as you give reality to dreams, you are their slave. By imagining that you are born as so-and-so, you become a slave to the so-and-so. Again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, treating everything as a dream liberates. As long as you give reality to dreams, you are their slave. By imagining that you are born as so-and-so, you become a slave to the so-and-so. All right, looking at the journal, number 287. The great error is reacting to anything in the world as if it is true and important. Every time this error is made, the idea that illusions are real is solidified. How shall one desiring to awaken react to apparent scenes of importance in the world? With self-inquiry and self-watching. This is the practice that awakens. There's no way that this journal encourages lying to yourself. Lying to yourself about how you feel about something is the least helpful thing that you can do. And in fact, I mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes I experience people trying to copy me. And by that I mean they haven't had the realization that I have had, And yet they listen to me, and then they begin to speak as if they have had the same realization. And it doesn't work. One of the common ways that I see people try to copy me is by copying my peace, my joy, my ability to be happy no matter what happens. When actually, for them, there's still an upset. There's still a wanting things to be different. There's still a wishing this didn't happen. But they hear me teach and they hear me talk about how, you know, this thing happened in my life and I was totally okay with it. And the ego in their mind says, you know, in a way that they don't clearly notice it, the ego in their mind says something like, in order to be worthy, you have to be like her. If you cannot be happy with whatever happens in your life, you're a failure. You suck. This is how our beloved ego speaks to us. And so when something goes wrong in their life, something happens that they really don't like, they really wish it hadn't happened, and maybe anger comes up, maybe fear comes up, maybe, you know, something else comes up, but then they remember that voice. If you're not like Regina, you are unworthy. And then they lie to themselves. They lie. They pretend like, you know, to themselves, not just the outer world, but to themselves, they pretend like this was not upsetting to me. And I've watched people do that, and I've watched how it creates an inner power keg. And, you know, they're just stuffing all of this stuff down that they're not looking at and they're not being honest about. And eventually, always, the day comes when it blows. It has to. And then suddenly they're hating everyone. They're, you know, it's just, it doesn't have to happen. You know, it is true that I am happy. It is true that I'm at peace. But this came from, as we said at the beginning of the hour, doing my own work. This came from honest inner work, years of honest inner work and not copying anyone. In this particular journal entry, it gives a suggestion of a practice, two practices actually, that might be helpful. You know, one thing that happened for me last week, which, again, I was okay with. Lately in my bank account, money began to pile up. And I did have some ideas about how I might want to spend that money. You know, there were some thoughts about things I might do. But then last Tuesday, a man came to my house and looked at my heating system, my air conditioning system, my hot water heater, and said they all needed to be replaced. And that took literally every penny I had, plus more. For the first time in a number of years, it looks like I may go into a little bit of debt. I've gone to the bank and applied for a loan. Now, this is okay for me. If it really is, it's okay. But let's pretend like it wasn't. Let's pretend like I still feel that my security is based on money, and I liked having that nest egg there, and now the nest egg is completely gone, and I'm in debt. And I start to hyperventilate. What do I do with that? The first thing is admit it. The first thing is admit I'm scared shitless. I felt really good while I had that money in the bank. But now that money's gone, I'm scared. What if something else happens? I don't have any money. You know, that's very scary. And then, this recommends two possible practices. One possible practice is self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is sitting down in my chair over there with, in my case, with my pen and paper, like Sharon said she was going to do, and doing the work. I would start to ask, who is scared shitless? What is scared shitless? You know, and the answer would come up, it's the mind. It's all of these thoughts. It's, you know, these thoughts about the future. What if this happens? What if this happens? It's all of this thinking, right? And I might even write out a lot of the thoughts that the mind are telling me about why I should be scared and look at them. And then I might start asking, maybe something like the Byron Katie work would start to come into my mind. Maybe I'd start asking, is this true? Do I know that this is true? Do I know that I am not secure without that money? Do I know that something is going to happen in the future that is going to be disastrous, which is what the ego is telling me? Do I know that I'm not okay? Right? Is this true? Right? And then from that process, I might start, you know, looking again, how am I right now? Without these fears, if I just look at my beingness, how is my beingness right now? Is it still here? Is it present? Is it touched? Has it changed? Right? And who knows exactly how the work would be guided if I go and sit in that chair with my fear of having no money. But the point is, I don't lie and pretend like I'm at peace when the truth is I'm not. I don't stuff that down inside of myself and not look at it because of some fear that I'm not worthy because I felt something other than peace. I go and I do the work. I let my inner guidance guide me on how to truly look at that, on how to get to a point of letting go. Another practice that used to come to me, if some of you, I don't know if the people in the room now have known me for a long time, your names aren't as familiar, but people who have known me for a long time know that one practice I had for a very long time was called rest, accept, and trust. Right? When the stuff came up, I was guided to rest the mind. So the mind might have lots of stories about all these horrible things that could happen now that I don't have money. You know, the car could break, the this could happen, that could happen, I don't have money, it's, you know, it's not going to be okay, right? So rest means notice that those stories are just stories and do not give my attention to them. Rest the mind. There's the mind telling a story of a disaster that may happen in the future, but that's all it is a story. I'm going to take a breath and not give my attention to that. Oh, there's the mind telling another story of something that's going to happen, and I'm going to need money, okay? Yeah, I'm going to take a breath. This is just a story. The mind is making stuff up. I'm not going to listen to it, right? A conscious decision not to listen to the mind's stories, that's rest. Accept how I feel now. Accept that I'm scared shitless. Accept that I'm in fear about not having money. Don't deny it. Don't lie about it. Accept it. It's how I feel now. But feelings change. This isn't permanent. This isn't truth. It's not going to last. It doesn't have a statement, an actual statement about who I am. So I'm just going to accept how I feel now and just let it be. Right now I feel fearful. And then trust. Is trust the healing process? If I am resting the mind from the stories and accepting how I feel, not denying it, not repressing it, not projecting it, just letting it be, right? It's going to heal. So I'm going to trust that healing process. You see, this is the type of work that I did over there in that chair that got me to the point where all of my money could disappear and I'm totally fine. Like it doesn't mean a thing. It's almost like the money wasn't real in the first place. So the fact that it's not there doesn't mean anything. Nothing lost. Self-watching, of course, is another practice that's recommended. For me, in my path, this is a more mature practice. It's not something I could have done earlier, but you know, we're all different. Maybe for some people, self-watching is the easiest and the earliest thing that shows up. Self-watching is being aware of that part of us that is changeless, that is not affected, and just staying with it, being with it, giving all of our attention to it. Some people call it awareness, watching awareness. I think Nisargadatta called it giving attention to attention, you know, but paying attention that there is a non-affected self here that's okay. So back to number 287, the great error is reacting to anything in the world as if it is true and important. The way I would react to it is if it was true and important, well, there's a number of ways. I could have a grievance against the technician and the company that came in here and told me I needed a new system. I could think they are ripping me off. I could be, you know, going on and on and on about them, right? Again, I could just be listening to all the stories about how I'm not going to be okay now that I don't have money. I could be going to my parents, going to somebody, begging for money, saying I need money, right? I mean, there's a number of ways that I could see this as real and important. And what this says is that's a great error. The error is to see it as if it's true and important. Every time this error is made, the idea that illusions are real are solidified. So if I was to run to my parents begging for money, or if I was to have a grievance against this company, I would actually be solidifying illusions. The great error is reacting to anything in the world as if it is true and important. The great error is reacting to anything in the world as if it is true and important. Every time this error is made, the idea that illusions are real is solidified. How shall one, desiring to awaken, react to apparent scenes of importance in the world? Because unless we've already done the work, we aren't at peace. It does scare us shitless when every penny we have goes out the door, and more. That's scary, right? So what do we do? What do we do? We sit down in our chair and we do the work. We practice self-inquiry. We practice self-watching. We practice rest, accept, and trust. We practice Byron Katie's, the work, you know, whatever we are guided to. But this is a time to sit down and do the work. Not a time to run off in the world trying to solve the problem. Doing the work. This is practice that awakens. And remember, I'm going to go back and read number 286. The answer to every problem is truth realization. Even being completely out of money. The answer to every problem is truth realization. When this is seen clearly, truth realization becomes the only reasonable desire, which means as soon as your money disappears and you notice the fear coming up, the first thing you do is go to your chair. The first thing you do is look at it with Holy Spirit, because that's the only reasonable answer to the problem. It doesn't lie in anything or anyone else. All right, so now we're going to click on number 288. 288 will be the final one that we look at today. I will put a link to 288 in the room. I'm going to read number 288 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and it says, "Only reality is. There is nothing else. Only reality is. There is nothing else. The three states of waking, dreaming, and sleeping are not me, and I am not them." And as I mentioned before in my teaching, whenever Nisargadatta says I or me or my or mine, he is speaking from the voice of the Absolute. We all do well to listen to Nisargadatta not as a man, but as the voice of God. Right? The voice of God. And the voice of God says, "Only reality is. There is nothing else. The three states of waking, dreaming, and sleeping are not me, and I am not in them. Right? Okay, so let's look at the journal. Number 288. In an apparent lifetime, there are many phases. Childhood, adulthood, old age. Times of bodily strength and times of bodily weakness. Periods of emotional confidence and periods of emotional anxiety or shame. In truth, there is no change. I am truth. So I mentioned to you a little bit ago that the test of change is going to be applied to help distinguish the difference between what is real and what is unreal. And Sri Nisargadatta's quote, he is saying, the I that experiences awake, a dream, and sometimes sleep, neither awake or dream, that's not real. It can't be real because that is a change. There is a difference between awake, and by awake I don't mean spiritually awake. I mean, you know, daytime awake. For some people it might be nighttime awake if they're day sleepers, but you know my point. If you can experience the state that we call, you know, just being awake in the world, right? Not asleep. And you can experience having a dream. And you can experience a deep sleep that is neither dream nor awake. Well, those are all change. And the I that experiences that change is not real. When it came through me after contemplation, it was looked at differently. I was once five. I can tell you a story about something that happened in kindergarten, because I was there and it happened to me. And then I was a young adult. And I can tell you a story about what happened to me then. Now I am 52. And I can tell you what it's like to be 52 compared to what it's like to be a teenager. Right? And, you know, if I'm lucky, someday I'll be older than 52. Right? There have been times in my life when I felt very strong, very fit, and there have other times when I felt weak, I felt fat, I felt sick. There are times when I've had a lot of confidence in who I was. I felt successful. There are other times when I felt like the slimiest slime on the planet Earth, the lowest of the low. I have felt and experienced all of these. That I, when I say I have felt and experienced all of these, that I is not real. Because anything that changes is not truth. If I can be happy or I can be depressed, if I can feel emotional love or I can be angry and hateful, that I is not real. And of course, the great mistake that we all make is thinking that is who I am. And this is where we also try and fix that I. We try and make that I always loving because we think always loving is better than hateful, right? We might try and fix that I by being always fit because we think physically fit is better than roly-poly. We may even try and keep that I young because we think young is better than old. But that I is not real. That's what we're here to see. Change is the test. Does it change? Does I change? If I say yes, it changes. Yes, because I used to feel this way about people and now I feel this way about people, it has changed. That I is not real. Only reality is there is nothing else. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. The three states of waking, dreaming, and sleeping are not me. He's speaking from the Absolute. And I am not in them. The journal. In an apparent lifetime, there are many phases: childhood, adulthood, old age, times of bodily strength and times of bodily weakness, periods of emotional confidence and periods of emotional anxiety or shame. In truth, there is no change. I am truth, which means I am not the parent, the person who experiences this change. I am not the person who is maturing or not maturing. I am not the person who is waking up or not waking up. Where there is apparent change, that is not what I am. And that's it. I'm out of time. So we'll continue this next Sunday. Goodbye, everyone. Have a super day.